A discussion with Z's Caravan. Welcome to Create with Tripulix. Hey, it's me. This is episode number 22, and I hope you enjoy this conversation with Izzy. So how's it going, man? Where are you anyway?
Pretty good, dude. Right now, man, I'm way far away from you, dude. On the other side of the world. I'm in Southeast Asia right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Are you touring or made to stay in place?
Oh no, this is, I'm just here for work and stuff, man. So yeah. part of my day gig, man. I teach at a college here, so a couple of colleges here, so.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. Oh, this is Izzy from Izzy's Caravan.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah, yeah. I did have the right person.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
So are you still playing music or?
Yeah, for sure. That's the main job. That's the main gig.
That's the main gig.
We just released a new record last week. It just came out last week.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's what we're plugging. Yeah, that's what we're plugging right now. No.
Well, I will. I'm a different kind of person to begin with. I try purposely not to follow rules and walk in straight lines or stay in my lane when I drive, but that's just the way I roll.
Fair enough. Man.
So you're not US based, I take it. Where you're in Asia?
No, but we're actually, our roots are in Canada though. We started off in Canada. Part of the band is still there right now. I'm just sort of globetrotting right now though.
But, wow, that sounds like a really sucky life, man.
Yeah, it keeps me on the go, man.
You're not married, right?
No, man. Hello, dude.
Okay, so I was just checking to make sure that if you're gonna be a cat and roll in Rome, man, you guys gotta roam right. The one thing that I see a lot of my musician friends do over time, a little bit about me, man, is I originally created this podcast to be a interview process where I interview on the spot, and I have this entire studio set up that's portable and can do a real face-to-face interview. Yeah. I also came up with a way that even in those shitty dive bars that you play in that have no room, that they like put a riser and the waitress like bumps your mic stand when she goes by. I figured out a way to film that.
You gotta patent that stuff, dude. That's a moneymaker right there, man. This is awesome, dude. I like the spontaneity, man.
No, it gets worse. It really gets worse. The only thing that I do, I like demand is like clear audio and clear video. Other than that, the rest of the rules are out the window.
Yeah. It's the do-it-yourself world now, man. It's just, I think gone are the days where you had to go to a studio or a recording.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't buy that, man. Why do you think that? Please.
Nah, it's like just sort of being a guitar player and stuff. It's like we're sort of at this really strange crossroads right now where some of these softwares and they're becoming so authentic, dude. It's you're hearing of guys like, I believe Mark Knopfler is now using some of these modeling amps and stuff, so it's like that debate between tube amps versus these new modeling amps and stuff, and these amp simulators, but it's just they've really sort of upped the game. And, from what I'm seeing right now, I think this post-pandemic world that we're going to come out on the other side, is going to be a highly digitized world, for good or for bad. I mean, obviously, we'll, applying some foresight, we can obviously, judge the pros and the cons and what's going to be the world after. But look at this, man. I mean, the whole sort of, I mean, it's a Zoom world, right? The work from home narrative, education has to shift online.
You don't know. Have you been hearing what's going on in the States?
With the schools and stuff?
No. The universities States have been doing, they've been preaching some really hateful shit, and they've been hidden behind closed doors doing it.
Really?
Yeah. So basically what's been going on over the last 2 weeks in the United States, it started out with protests.
Right, yeah.
Because of something, an atrocity that a police officer and all that. So lately, what's been going on is the extremists have been toppling statues.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
All over the country.
Yeah, CNN on right now, in fact.
But what they don't show you is every once in a while the extremists. Do you know anything about the United States, man?
Yeah, for sure, man.
So you know what happens when you get away from a really big city and you're out in the country, you just don't pull it. Well, people, 70 protesters showed up in this little hick town to protest, and they got met with 700 motorcycle bikers and
that's
people with baseball bats telling them to go the hell home. So what I'm saying is, I hope what you're saying is really true. Are you you said you got a CD out, and I agree with you about some of it, but I understand tube amps. I'm not really that much into audio, but I play an MP3. Does that help?
That's the thing, man. It's just like I said, right? The entire medium has shifted to MP3s.
The entire medium, consumers are, excuse me. Oh, wait a minute. It's my podcast. Consumers are idiots, okay? Yeah. They don't know what good quality is. Have you ever heard of Bose?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I was like,
is the biggest piece of shit I ever saw in my life. Bose secret, if you want to reproduce it, is you know how you can put a compressor on your guitar?
Right, yeah.
Okay. So put a high amp and a low amp in for, and then cut the middle completely out.
Right.
That's Bose. They have no middle.
Yeah.
It's just high and low.
Yeah.
I mean, Bosch and Schneider, the Swiss company.
Right.
That's quality. Of course, home bookshelf speakers are $15,000. So, that Bosch and Lomb, no, I can't remember what the name is now. That's quality stuff. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah,
so
my dad's a big audiophile, so.
That where you got the bug?
That's where it started, dude. But all the speakers and stuff. I mean, it's like, and with these guys, man, they're always looking for that. They're never content with the sound that they get, man. These extreme audio files. It's like a lifelong pursuit, man, where they're just trying to find that perfect tone. And, you're sort of going like, dude, And nowadays, you know, it's like speaking of MP3s, I mean, you know, you throw a vinyl on and today's audience would be like, what the hell is that, right? I mean, like, dude, this is authentic, you know, the sonics of this. It's beautiful stuff, man. But yeah, it's just, it's such a complex system now. I mean, you're always trying to, and you've always got to be on the, in the know, because it's so easy to get left behind now, you know, MP3s.
MP3 is like a compression algorithm, and it squeezes all of the quality out of the
absolutely.
Out of the audio.
So,
and what's funny is I got to convert this video, this audio up to the podcast networks into MP3. So, you know, I can make it so clean. But so tell me about life at home and living with the audiophile. That, and how did you end up getting to Asia, man? That's cool, but
it was great, man. I mean, that's again, you know, I think I was lucky that way, where at least I got to listen to good music when I was a kid.
Like who?
You know, like everything from Dire Straits to Pink Floyd to you know, all that stuff, right? Because that was Zeppelin and the Stones and stuff, right? That's what my dad was listening to, right? And he'd be playing all these, you know, testing speakers and stuff. So as a kid, man, I mean, when you're listening to this stuff, and you're just literally going like, wow, man, what is this, right? I mean, it's just such a sonic onslaught, right? You're just like, second thing, that the sound of the guitar, at that point, it's like, wow, man, this is what I want to do, right? I mean, you know, but it's easy enough to, you know, equivalent to, you know, how every kid wants to be an astronaut, you know, it's like, well, that's just know how things are going to work out sometimes, right? So it's easy to listen to it, but yeah, that's where it all began, man. It's that level of influence, you know. Again, when I think there was some degree of purity in that music back then, right, in the 60s and 70s, where it could easily sort of pull you in, and I really got pulled into it very early on, and you know, it's like I still listen to the same music that I listened to when I was a kid, right? Obviously, everyone's like, dude, move on, right? I mean, like, seriously, update your playlist, right? But I just never tired of it, man. In fact, I still listen to the same music I used to years back, and I just
what format do you listen to them?
Well, tragically, it's MP3s.
Okay.
Because that's just the easiest. It's because every device is now. I mean, that sort of technological convergence, right? Where
sure,
you know, now your phone is pretty much everything, right? I mean, it's your
right,
camera,
right.
Your video player, and it's your music player. It's your source of news. It's your email. That convergence is so you have no choice as such anymore. It's got to be MP3. And
yeah, or stream, and everybody pushes you towards stream, but
right.
there's bad downsides to streaming, you know, besides that. But have you heard the screaming going on from the streaming services about artists not getting paid?
Yeah, man. And in fact, did you hear about Live Nation?
No. What's going on with them?
Well, I guess you might want to check that out, because Live Nation just released a set of new policies about touring and stuff. I mean, Live Nation is probably the biggest promoter in the world, right?
Right, right.
We're an $11, $12 billion corporation, man. And yeah, they were, from what I read, what I heard, they're really shortchanging the artists, man, big time.
Yeah, and that was the other reason that I wanted to do what I was planning on doing, not having anything to do with the music itself, just the venue.
Yeah.
Because it gets murky when you get over into the other side.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, just some things like where, you know, the payouts to the bands have been really cut down. If they don't show up, they don't get paid. I mean, in the sense that if there aren't enough ticket sales and stuff, bands don't get paid. I mean, it was pretty brutal, man. It's really hard being a musician nowadays, man, because people think it's easy, right? It's like, all right, well, it can't be that hard, right? Write a song, put it on YouTube, and they'll probably get, that's your claim to fame. But that's not how it works, though, right? Because for every song you put up, there are probably, 20,000 other songs you put in the same hour. There's a huge misconception that this has somehow become easier than it used to. I mean, I don't think so. I think it's become really, really difficult now. I mean, to sort of have your tracks filtered through the thousands and thousands of other songs that are being put out there is actually, in some ways, has become even harder.
I think there's this thing, and it's kind of the reason that I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And it has to do with the same thing of sorts.
Yeah.
It was, I wrote a couple books. Okay. Cool. They're not music, they're books. Yeah. And I made a tragic mistake of selling into a niche and selling more than most people sell the first time they did something. So, which is a double whammy, because when you make your follow-up, you don't get the same thing, and you wonder, am I ugly now? I mean, you date a swimsuit model one time in your life, dude. That's all that happens. what I'm getting at is, in the old days, there was so less people that were being promoted to the general audience.
Right.
And they weren't forced to promote themselves. But when they were promoted, those people took care of the audience and did that connection. Because it wasn't, in your industry, it's like, oh, well, to get onto the radio or get on to be featured on YouTube or to be featured by Pandora, these things all cost money now.
Well, fair enough. Yeah. Yeah.
You can be, and you can get your book at the airport. If you want your book at the airport, that deal is like $5,000 a week.
Wow.
That you pay to have your book at the airport. It's about being seen by the masses.
Yeah.
And there are times that you want to do that, not the shit that I write, but there are things that you do. But thank God I don't play music. It would be even worse.
Give it a shot, man. Give it a shot, dude. Never too late, man. Yeah,
I've been told that. I can't keep a beat worth of shit.
Yeah.
But amen. The thing is, man, you got to know who your customers are. And I mean, know them. You got to reach out and touch your customer. And if you're going to reach out and touch your customer, there's all these, the thing is, if you're going to send an email to your customers, you got to give them something.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay. It's not, I'm living the life in Asia and I wish you were here. Come check out my new CD.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't work. But what does work is you can go to my website, and if you use this code, you can have this track for free.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying for you to do that, but what I'm saying is that for me to open an email, there's got to be some kind of goodie for me, because if I open up the email one time and I don't see any benefit for me, I'm never going to open your emails again.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are the little sort of ploys that you have to, but again, you're right. You have to give the audience something, right? Especially now. I mean, the problem is, we'd probably be on tour right now if it wasn't for this this whole, you know, lockdown pandemic thing.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's gonna go away in another 6 months, and we'll be back. We'll be back to normal, walking around with masks and clubs in the United States, but. It'll be cool because we'll get baseball bats, but then we'll do color coordination, you know, from designers on the mask and the baseball bat. It's, you know, something else.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I mean, what can I say, man? It's a strange world where we live in, man.
Yeah, it is. So tell me about the part, where in Asia are you?
Me? I'm in Pakistan right now.
Okay. Okay. Are you near the Chinese border where there's a war going on, or?
No, not even close, man.
Cool.
Yeah, not even close.
So are you in the part of, so are you near the water, or is there?
Yeah. In fact, literally seafront. I mean, like, I got the sea right in front of me. I mean, literally, I look out and just water.
So you planned this trip. You are one of those people that decided, oh shit, a pandemic's gonna come up. I'm gonna go on vacation.
Hey, man. I don't think anyone saw this coming, dude. I really don't think anyone saw this coming. Although maybe Stephen Hawking did, but I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, he died, so.
But no, you know, no one heard about that. Guy had something going for him, dude.
So you have been lounging at the beach the entire time?
Hardly, dude. No, man. It's
what have you been doing?
Me, I've got a little. I mean, I know I work here for a bit, right? So I mean, I got my degree in philosophy, so it's not like you know, people are lining up to hire philosophy majors, man. You know? so I had to do something, dude.
Yeah.
Hey, man, just being honest, man. It's not like, you know, there's like a Wall Street for philosophy majors, right? Hey, man, philosophy majors in demand, dude. You know, I mean, there's just a handful of us left anyway, right? I mean,
right. Are you any good at it, though?
At philosophy?
Yeah.
are we ever any good at anything?
There you go. That was actually deep.
Yeah. There you go. That was the moment you were looking for, man. That was it, dude.
So what's life like in Pakistan? I mean, really, what are you doing that each day? Because look.
See, I mean,
this is your golden opportunity, because most people that are going to hear this are going to hear this in North America pretty much, right?
Right.
And they got no idea besides CNN videos, which flip and lie about everything.
Yeah,
of what being in Pakistan is really like. So this is your opportunity to fix it for the world of what Pakistan is like.
Hey, man, I'm taking no responsibility for fixing anything, man. I can barely get my own life in order, dude. I'm not fixing anything. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, dude, it's a lot different from how it's perceived on television. Really, really different. I mean, I'm originally from here. Then I lived in Canada, now I'm back here, and I'll, you know, hopefully next year we'll be on tour again there. But yeah, I mean, it's a very bipolar society, by the way. There's, you know, you've got your I mean, what I do is lecture. I mean, I'm a college lecturer, and I teach sociology in a bunch of these private schools, right? And it's all, very wealthy kids, right?
Okay.
Predominantly very wealthy kids coming to these private schools and stuff. So, because again, it's like a very, you know, you've got your, I mean, the class segregation is very dominant here, right?
And, right.
So if you're well-to-do, you've got a great life here. If, you know, I mean, and it's so westernized anyway. I mean, the globalization has again taking a real foothold here. I mean, we have like 24-hour McDonald's here. I mean, 24-hour delivery, everything. Like a KFC on, you know, every street. So it's, we got all that stuff here. So yeah, it's not like it's what you see like you said on CNN. So yeah, it's again, it's interesting that way. I mean,
yeah, but the other side of it is that in that society, from what I understand, the lower classes aren't included at all, and they're pretty much banished from the rest of life, and you just kind of see them scurry around, kind of like how we'd view the mentally ill society that live on the streets in North America. There's a hell of a lot more of them because there isn't really a middle class. There's
absolutely
got it. Yeah. And those that don't are scurry along. And you, if you're in the upper class in that kind of society, there's just, instead of seeing the random homeless person in the city center, two of them, you see more like families and other people, but you don't really pay any attention because they're in a different class.
Right. Yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, the class segregation is really, the class divide is really intense, man.
So you're a blues player, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so, I like to think so.
Yeah, so yeah. So this is really a head scratcher for me because I'm really into blues, and I've seen some of the great blues guys, and I also understand the underpinnings of the Mississippi Delta and that sound. So I was really kind of curious, but you in the upper class being a So what you're doing is you're taking your guitar and you're going down to the lower classes and picking up chicks, aren't you? You're cruising with the guitar, playing American blues, picking up chicks on the wrong side of the track in Pakistan.
It was all plotted out. I masterminded the whole thing.
You would. You're in sociology and philosophy.
I figured it out, man. I figured it out, dude. You know, the meaning of life, man. Yeah, that was it, dude.
So tell me what the meaning of life is. If you're male and you're single, I know what the meaning of life is. So you play guitar?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I do.
Okay, are you playing like a 6 or a 12 string?
6.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I have some friends that are like, you know, the blues scene in the United States is kind of shit the bed, and it's kind of like if I hear one more white guy start doing a tune about living in a shanty in Mississippi, it just doesn't work. I mean, it really doesn't work. So what inspires you about blues, and how popular is it in Asia even?
It's not popular at all. I mean, yeah, you've got the Stevie, you know, you've got the someone like Clapton, of course, is like a global phenomenon, right? So he's, you know, his music is here. You've got the guitar playing community that's pretty big on Stevie Ray's here. So they like that stuff. Man, honestly, I got more and more when I came back into music, I got pulled into sort of like this Pandora's box of, you know, really traditional musicians. So, I mean, I was really big into Buddy Guy. But then I got really roped into Lytton Hopkins, guys like that. I mean, Lytton Hopkins was a big influence on me, even though, I mean, you know.
Yeah, but he was scratchy, you know, too. And I
yeah,
know.
Really, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's really like scratchy. And if you listen, if you've got, I've got a couple of his albums, copies of his stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of like Zeppelin was blues. They ripped off everybody in the blues. Right. I mean, literally. Yeah. I was driving. I had a job and I was in a car and I was driving for like 4 hours. And this late at night, and this DJ came on and was playing, I'm going to say it was Led Zeppelin 3.
Yeah.
And all the blues. He'd play a song off of Led Zeppelin 3 and then play the blues guy's original tracks that they stole the song from. So it was kind of like you listen to Zeppelin and then you listen to they did a Muddy Waters tune. They stole from him. I mean, but it was really good stuff. Stones too. Did you ever get to see Stones in that?
I saw them a couple of times actually. Great show, man. Saw them one time at the Sky Dome in Toronto. That was really awesome.
Cool. Did you when you went, did you go with buddies or did you take a girl with you?
Man, dude, when I used to go to shows normally, a couple of times, I actually preferred going by myself. Because I used to normally take a trip down pretty
You're early. A music geek. That's why you wanted to go by yourself.
Yeah, man. and that's the best way to do it because, you know, you can sort of like dictate, you know, that because it's, you know, it's such a great experience. I mean, I still remember, what was it? AC/DC. I saw them a couple of nights and it was really cool because I saw them two nights, in Toronto, and Slash, a Snake Pit was opening for them. And, you know, I honestly think had I been with a bunch of friends and stuff, probably what happened to me would never happen, which was because I went by myself and I went really early to the venue, hung out there, you know, have your beers in the morning, like afternoon beers and stuff, chill out at the venue. So you end up just meeting a whole bunch of people.
Right.
And it just so happened that one of the radio stations was having an interview with Slash and the entire band. And these guys literally just came out into this radio. There was like this little bus with the whole radio gear in it. And they went in. So when they came out, now because the security guards had seen me all day, I was like, come on, man, Slash, dude. I mean, I'm never going to get this chance again, man. They literally let us hang out with these guys, man. And then that same night, I got to meet Angus as well, Angus Young. And that was, I mean, but again, the point being, had I probably been there with a bunch of my friends or something, it would have probably never worked out. So it gives you that level of freedom to sort of, you know, dictate how you want to go see that show, right?
Right.
I mean, I would usually just go by myself. That's, you know, Aerosmith. I mean, I was boyhood Aerosmith fan, right?
He fell off the stage and after a song, never go see Aerosmith again.
Yeah, but boyhood Aerosmith fan, dude. I got an Aerosmith dad in my hand. That was, you know, their first 4 or 5 records. I was like a huge Joe Perry fan at one point in my life.
So do you have your guitar with you and you're like practicing every day for a few hours in the morning and then go to work and then practice again when you get home?
Yeah, sometimes I think I'm living the Bruce Wayne Batman the Bruce Wayne Batman life, dude. My daytime is my Bruce Wayne mode where everyone thinks I'm this smart, intellectual, you know, college lecturer, and then nighttime is my real self sort of surfaces, which is you know, this guy who makes these records and you know, is out here plugging them on the radio show, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, and connecting with your fans, man, because that's what that's what it really is about.
Yeah.
So, let's see. So what do you eat in Pakistan? I got no clue.
Like I said, man, it's
no, I know you're not eating McDonald's because that shit will kill you.
Yeah, I mean it's here. I don't eat it. In fact, but just I as much as I really don't like it, I actually had KFC today only because, man, this lockdown is really, some of these restaurants close really early now and it's only delivery. So I have no choice but to eat KFC today, man, which is brutal. Not a fan, dude.
Yeah, well, the U.S., at least the Northeast where I'm at.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to wear masks and people aren't wearing masks now, but the whole thing, we'll see.
Yeah. Like I said, I was just watching CNN and apparently there's a real surge again.
Nah, CNN lies, dude. I just get tired. CNN and MSNBC are so full of crap.
Yeah,
I mean Fox News is too, but those two together, they're horrid. I mean, I kind of know what's going on all the time, and I hurt myself, and which made me stay in bed, literally, for close to 3 weeks during a pandemic.
Wow!
Like I couldn't leave the bed.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to entertain myself and I put CNN and MSNBC on for a day. And I was scared where I was like, wait a minute, this isn't, I mean, they scare their crap out of people. And
the world is ending, man. This is it. You got 5 minutes to live.
You got 5 minutes left.
A huge asteroid on the way, man. It's all over. Hey, right, have your last beer. That's it.
So what's the deal with drinking beer in Pakistan? Is it like the upper class can do that and the lower class can't? Is that what it is?
Dude, I love how you've lumped me in the upper class.
Well, I know you're the wannabe blues guy, but
the upper class blues,
Yeah, the white. Well, you don't do that. You can't do the white collar experience thing, and you can't say that. You know, you can't do the blues with like a Brooklyn accent. I saw that once. That was really funny. You're practicing a lot, and are you doing live concerts from where you're at?
No, man, we're stuck. We literally just got this record out. This is, I guess, a pandemic record now. And it sucks because I really, really, it's for lack of, better phrases or cliches. I mean, it was like a blood, sweat, and tears record, man. I mean, this is I keep calling it my identity record because I feared this is what really would define me as a musician. And this is the one bloody record that we really wanted to take out of the road. And now, now we can't. So, well, hopefully, let's see, man, December, if things clear up a little bit, that's when, we might, hit the road for a few shows. But next summer for sure, we're already working on. In fact, since we're all stuck right now, we're actually I released my first record in December 2019, then a second one in February, now this third one in June, and we're getting so freaking frustrated. We're just like, you know, since we're stuck, we might as well just work on a fourth record and just get that done by December. And that way we have a bunch of music behind us to take on the road, right? So if nothing else...
So when you talk about road, yeah, where is that road? Where do you play?
We'll try and, I mean, you know, work out something where we do a whole bunch of shows in the U.S. and Canada next summer for sure.
Okay. Where in the U.S. do you play?
Well, we'll try and figure it out.
Wait. One thing. One that we got to do right now is, how does somebody get in touch with you?
Oh, yeah. They can just easily go on my website.
Say your name and everything for the audience, dude. You got to it's an audio file.
Yeah. It's www.izzyscaravan.com. That's I-Z-Z-I-E-S, caravan.com. You can go to our YouTube page, just search for Izzy's Caravan. Hunt me down on Instagram as well, just Instagram/Izzy's Caravan. SoundCloud, again, just look up Izzy's Caravan. Facebook, just got a Facebook page going as well, believe it or not. But definitely check out our website. We've got tons of stuff out there, man. Tons of stuff.
Cool. Are you posting music actually, or video files on Instagram? Because apparently they allow it.
No, not as yet, man. I'm not really big on social media and stuff. But apparently you need to have it now. So I was like, what the hell, man?
I'm on everything. Yeah. And cool. There was, I mean, like literally everything. So I've tried to get this, my name, same username on everything.
Yeah.
And I really hate it when people don't allow underscores, because I signed up for Parler and they wouldn't let me have my regular name. Which really pissed me off, sort of.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been using the internet since the second day it was available.
Right.
So I had to wait for like 6 years for web pages to get made.
Right.
So I've been doing this for a really long time. So all of the social networks, this stint for Facebook and Twitter and Google has been the longest stint of services on the network,
right,
that have ever been. I mean, before that, there was AOL that was around for a really long time, over really long time. And I think all those people went over to Facebook, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It, being on Facebook just means you don't know how to use the internet. It really is. Just so how do you have a database or you of customers or fans, or how are you reaching out?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's just, again, you know, press, radio interviews, putting our music out there. In fact, like I said, if you go to our website and stuff, most of our music is up there. It's available on all digital platforms, Spotify, Apple, iTunes, everything, Deezer, Napster, Tidal, name it. It's all up there. The whole works. So check it
out. That would be a good place. That was a good place while you were talking about that. I'll throw some of your music in as an underlying track. When are you going to go back to Canada? When you're allowed?
A little bit. Let's see how it works out, man. I mean, let's see where life takes me, man. Right now, it's just, you know, again, at least one of the good things with technology is, because I pretty much do most of the songwriting and stuff anyway, so I, you know, then I'll send out the tracks to the rest of the guys, and you know, a bunch of them are still in Canada, so they'll sort of do their part and stuff, and then I'll work it out here. Then, you know, in a sense, it's one of those things where I got to keep my day job as well, right? Because this actually pays for, because music's bloody expensive now, man. Becoming a musician isn't cheap anymore, eh? Speaking of upper class and the blues, you got and that, like you said as well, man. I mean, to get you, you know, like to get your book done, you got to pay the money for it. So, so I got to keep my day job as well. Like I said, man, I mean, you know, hey, you know, if anyone out there wants to do a philosophy degree, you know, it might give you the meaning of life, but know the hazards behind it too. Yeah, because you're not exactly very marketable after that, right? I mean, I remember we used to joke around as well that we're probably the smartest people in the unemployment line, right? But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like, it, maybe, hey, it could be next year, it could be 5 years from now. I mean, but right now the system seems to be working fine, right? In the sense, we're doing what we want to do. And, you know, it's not like we'll be playing, you know, I mean, hey, you never know, but, you know,
yeah, but, like you're gonna, but what you're telling me is you're on a track to get really screwed over because you're going to do blues. You're doing blues in Pakistan and you're going to go across the tracks and then you're going to have the woman that's going to keep you in Pakistan. That's not going to let you to ever travel and tour. That's what you're telling me is going on.
No. It's simple enough, man. I mean, it's, you know, we write, like, you know, I mean, I think we sort of keep it traditional that way where, you know, at least, you know, I mean, when I was growing up, it was, hey, you know, the band would write a record, release an album, go on tour, and then do that whole, you know, and that cycle continues. And I think we're sort of playing by that, those rules now where, I mean, most of us have, you know, day jobs as well, right? So just one of those things where
I was talking to very young rapper.
Yeah.
Who told me that you don't do full albums anymore. You just do one track.
Yeah, we do EPs now. Because I actually find that, I mean, look, man, albums, dude, I think that's history, man. And to a certain degree, I actually agree with that. Like, I actually do EPs. A, I prefer, well, A, because you have to have some degree of circulation in music, and you have to be pretty consistent with it, right? You can't just release. You see, gone are the days where you released a record, or, I mean, an album, and then went on tour for 3 years and then released another album 5 years later. That's history. That's literally not possible anymore, man. Because again, the problem is, I mean, rather the issue is now just, I mean, and you know this, right? I mean, probably know this better than I do. It's just straight up streaming, right? I mean, give us the single, that's it. Why, see, I mean, I used to love getting CDs, right? I mean, there was a certain thrill behind waiting for an album to come out, you know, getting in line, buying the CD, taking that material artifact with you, right? Having that booklet and stuff. That was like, I mean, that was really awesome, right? Seeing who wrote the song, the lyrics, everything, right? The history behind the, you know, the record. It's over, man. It just, you know.
I guess I can't get my job back working at the record store.
it's just, and that's so to that extent. And one of the things is, like I said, yeah, your music, you have to be writing, recording, and releasing music pretty consistently. There's no way you can take a 2-3 year break and then release an album. I mean, you'd probably be forgotten by then. Sort of navigating that complexity, I mean, I actually find it better to release EPs, right? So 4 songs, you know, pick the best 4 songs, put them in, you know, package them, put them out. Also, that sort of circulation is much better. I mean, and you don't get stuck and mired doing that one same album and sitting on it, because, you know, some songs can take a week, other songs can take a month, man. I mean, it's just like, just, you know, you're not getting it right. So you don't have to get really, it's not a long-term commitment, right? An album is a long-term commitment, man. I mean, you know, and out of that, you're going to get that 1 or 2 singles out anyway. So yeah, he's got a point, man. Like I said, I just do EPs as well. and it keeps me, it freshens things up a little bit. I mean, here you go, four songs done, out, let's start again, right? Let's try 40, right? And to a certain degree, I mean, you can pick a gang of songs that, that sort of fit. And considering that it takes a little less time to do an EP, I think an EP also captures the mood and sort of your social environment that you're in, or your that level of you know, where you're at that point in your life, right? I think those songs are far more effective than an album, which can be a bit more hybridized in terms of emotions and you know, song structure and compositions and stuff. So it can become a little bit messy now, right? And again, considering that you're always under this pressure of releasing stuff, you know, at a pretty consistent speed, you know, it's just, to me, I just found the EP to be the most logical option there is.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, it was always, you know, I was always struggling to see more because again, this.
So when you teach sociology, what form of sociology, what level and what are you in sociology? I understand a little bit about your field, very little, but explain, since you brought up sociology, what it means.
Yeah, it's you know, well, I teach at a college level, so these are just pre-university students, right?
So explain sociology to the audience, please, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and so it's actually a 2-year course, and over that duration of 2 years, it, again, and by the way, it's all Cambridge, right? It's all through the University of Cambridge. These are all British exams, by the way. It's their curriculum. They're the ones who sort of market it, and they're the ones who sort of monitor everything. They do the grading and testing and everything. But in terms of the course, it's all, we literally start off with the basic elemental theories of the discipline, you know, how it originated, to specific units, which include the family, right, the media, religion, education. So these are some really dominant social structures that we sort of really delve into. The family, how industrialization actually impacted the family, family diversity, right? And it's really fascinating when you get into the complexities of actually defining, say, something as simple as the word family, and when you sort of peel off the, you know, the multiple elements that go into defining something like this, and how, you know, different cultures perceive it. So on and so forth. It really is astounding that how a word as simple as a family can actually be so complex in terms of its structure and how socialization takes place in a family. And then in the media, we do really fascinating stuff, right? You know, a very, very critical analysis of media in terms of, you know, ownership and control, for example, right? The stuff that we were talking about, right? Like Live Nation and Google and YouTube and whatnot, right? And, do owners have an influence? I mean, how does ownership influence democracy, for example? Representations of social groups in the media, aspects, you know, again, really interesting units like deviancy amplification, for example. Does the media actually, end up promoting violence in society, for example, or does it have a direct effect on the audiences, or does the audience critically interpret meanings and messages, you know, actively rather than passively? So yeah, it's a very, very intensive course. But,
And it's something that most people need to understand themselves, because I made references to a couple different things. I'll tell you, there's a book that I've always wanted to write, and I will write it at some point. I've written a couple novels, and it'll probably be a funny novel But yeah, the title of it is Start Your Own Cult for Fun and Profit.
I'll do the foreword for you for that one. maybe I'll do a soundtrack for you for that one.
Group cohesion and its qualities, and getting group cohesionness is what we all try for. But at the most simplistic levels, not having true cohesive features, which you have when you're in a family, because the family unit becomes more important than thyself. And this is what religious cults typically use. Countries use this. Give your life for your country and that kind of stuff. Listen, it was great talking to you, man. All right, man. You have a great evening. You have a great day. It's daytime here. It's
sure,
light
here.
All right.
All right. See you, buddy.
All right.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye. Bye. Cheers, man.
I hope you enjoyed this program, and obviously you did if you got to the very end. I would appreciate it very much if you would share this podcast with other folks that you know out there, and please, please leave me a review on iTunes. I really need to know that you exist. I really appreciate it, and I will be making another episode very shortly. Until then, adios.